What a pleasure to be here. This studio I love, and I love it because I used to sit here on the Doug Wright Show, and
right.
we had this program called Let Me Ask the Governor. And I used to refer to it as Let Me Harass the Governor, because the calls that would come in sometimes be highly personal, and we saw you here or there. But I loved it because it was such an intimate conversation with the people of the state, and it's such a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
Did you talk with Donald Trump about the Secretary of State job?
Well, not that specifically. We had a conversation earlier. And
how did that conversation go?
Well, it was more a congratulatory conversation, and happy to be of help where we can. So kind of left it at that. We've had a couple of conversations during the campaign. We actually had Donald Trump during the campaign late last year at an event in New Hampshire for a group that I co-chair along with former Senator Joe Lieberman, where we packed a ballroom of Republicans, Democrats, and independents, and we had all the then candidates come on stage to tell us not about politics, but about problem solving. So how are you going to solve the big issues of the day? Dispense with your typical political talk, and let's get right down to tax reform, balancing budgets, energy self-sufficiency. How are you going to handle the correcting the entitlement imbalances? And he was there and actually did pretty well. So that was kind of our first encounter last year. So I think that he is in an interesting way putting together an unprecedented cabinet.
So what do you make of Rex Tillerson?
Well, I think he's unlike any nominee we've had for Secretary of State, where most have come from diplomacy, academia, the intelligence community. And here we have somebody stepping right out of ExxonMobil. He's only been in one company since 1975, which is interesting. And you kind of have to hearken back to somebody else who I've known over the years, a guy named George Shultz, who was Ronald Reagan's Secretary of State. He took Al Haig's place in 1982. He had been president of a company called Bechtel, which is a large construction firm. And there was a lot of criticism at the time. You all were too young to remember that.
I
remember a little bit of that. And it was, Bechtel's a global multinational company, and you've built big things. You've got relationships with global leaders. You're too much of an insider. He made it through Senate confirmation, and I'd have to say is probably he goes down as one of our more outstanding secretaries of state, George Shultz, in large part because he brought that business experience to the table. He knew how to negotiate. He knew how to run a very large bureaucracy called the Department of State. And I think Rex Tillerson is likely to bring the same kinds of skills and qualities.
You bring up Senate confirmation. Do you think he's going to make it through Senate confirmation?
It's going to be a tough go. Personally, I've been through three Senate confirmation, so I know how this process works. And so the Senate Foreign Relations Committee will first have at him after an investigation, a full FBI and a Senate investigation. And it will be divided. And they're going to look at his ties to Russia. They're going to look at ExxonMobil as a corporation. They're going to look at some of the other areas in which they've been major investors and what the history has been like. So it's going to be a rough confirmation, but I think in the end he gets through.
Let's talk for a moment, Governor, about your experience with China and the one China policy. You know, President-elect Trump talked about how that could be a fluid thing and we need to make a deal and stepping away from our policy that the United States has had in agreeing that there was a one China policy with Taiwan. How important is that policy?
Well, the U.S.-China relationship has been built on a framework over several presidents, all the way back to 1972, Republicans and Democrats alike. And it came out of this sort of ambiguous framework with respect to how you handle Taiwan. That was always the outstanding issue. So it ended with there will be one China, and they both can claim to be China. And we live in this world of ambiguity. It's just the way that politics is sometimes done in other parts of the world. So shaking up that framework is going to cause great consternation, not just to those in China, but those in Taiwan too, and frankly, the whole neighborhood, because the whole neighborhood runs on a certain rhythm based on stability and predictability, and that's goes right back to the framework of the one China policy. So is there room for flexibility and change? Of course. In fact, the relationship runs on three communiques, basically, one dealing with security, the other our bilateral relationship, and the other how to deal with Taiwan. The last communique was done in about 1982. So if I were advising President-elect Trump, I would say there is room for an updated U.S.-China communique. Call it the Trump communique, whatever you want. And we need to put into this communique an updated sense of our relationship with Taiwan, North Korea, the South China Sea, counterterrorism, peace and stability in East Asia, how we work together in the Middle East, for example, where China has increased stakes and interests. There's a whole lot more that has to be framed or enshrined in a new understanding. And I think, listen, the way he's approaching this, the Chinese are totally off balance. And I suspect they'll be interested in sitting down and talking about how you can get something like this done.
Mm-hmm. Can you hang out for a second, Governor? We want
absolutely.
To get a quick check of traffic and weather together at 7:09. Let's do that right now. We'll come back and continue with some questions for the governor. Let's go back right now with Triple Team Traffic, and here's Andy Farnsworth.
Traffic still moving at or close to the speed limit on northbound I-15, heading up from Point of the Mountain to the South Interchange and into downtown. You're not going to see anything slowing you yet on I-215 on either side of the valley, 215 west or east. Bangor Highway had some slowing through West Valley earlier. Now it seems back to a little bit lighter traffic through the area. Eric?
We are just getting a report now of an accident or a vehicle on fire, actually, northbound on the 215 West Belt. This is about 2500 North, so if you're in that area, be careful of that. Stay away, obviously. No problems in Utah County right now. I-15 from Provo to the Point in good shape. Michelle?
We are looking at good freeway speeds in Davis counties. You're not going to really see any delays. Where you will see the delays is on the west and south gates leading into Hill Air Force Base. We're still looking at some pretty good backups. If you have 30 minutes, ARUP Blood Services needs all blood types to store up during the holidays. Learn how you can save a life. Visit utahblood.org. I'm Michelle Rowe in the KSL Traffic Center.
KSL News Time now is 7:11. Let's get a quick look at the weather forecast. And back over to you, Grant.
Had a mix of sun and high clouds yesterday, and more of the same today. More mild temperatures again. We reach 43. Tomorrow, we're up to 46 with some rain showers coming afternoon tomorrow. I'm Grant Wayman, KSL Weather Center.
And right now, downtown Salt Lake City, we've got a temperature of 29 degrees. We continue our conversation right now with former Utah Governor John Huntsman Jr. He's live here in studio. And remember, you can watch this interview right now with the KSL News Radio app. You just download it from iTunes or Google Play. Governor, I have to ask you about your name not only being thrown into the mix for a Secretary of State with Donald Trump, but also now being thrown into the mix as a possible contender to Orrin Hatch for the Utah Senate seat here in 2018. How do you respond to that possibility?
Can I say, Brian, that there's way too much talk about politics? can we just have a breather? I mean, if you could wave a magic wand, you'd say these campaigns go on interminably. They go on so
darn
long.
It just never ends, doesn't it?
So if you could wave a magic wand, you'd say, come on, let's not talk politics until about 6 months out of the election. let's get term limits for members of Congress, and let's fix the gerrymandering, which has taken competition completely out of politics. I can't wave a magic wand, but that's my answer to the talk about politics. You know, the fact of the matter there is Senator Hatch, who's been a good senator, has a decision to make. He said that he may be considering another term. I don't know what the answer to that is, because he said last time that this would be his last. And so probably there are a lot of folks who would be interested in going in 2018. So I think, you know, at least personally, you know, I owe him the respect of coming to that conclusion on his own and deciding where he wants to go. And that will then impact what we do and probably what a whole lot of other people do with respect to the Senate seat in 2018. Mm-hmm.
You know so much about diplomacy with your expertise and experience as ambassador. If you were...
It's called, Amanda, raising seven kids.
Yes. You know,
there's
kids.
Diplomacy there right there.
You're going to learn a little bit about diplomacy.
May I ask you,
you're going to stay married for 33 years.
Yes.
You're going to learn a little about diplomacy.
How to get along with people.
Based on that experience, then, if you were advising President-elect Trump, would you advise him to get off Twitter?
Oh, I think so. You can't conduct national affairs or international affairs on Twitter. What you say is taken literally in every capital of the world. And listen, with the presidency comes enormous responsibility. You're speaking for all 320 million people in the United States, and your words do matter. So I think it's been a very useful tool during the campaign. In fact, I think it's been a winning tool in terms of how he has captured the imagination of people and done it as sort of an unpredictable independent. But now when you're speaking for the United States of America, you might want to rethink your tools of communication.
So what are you up to now? What are you focusing on right now? What are you doing?
Well, right now, for example, yesterday we just had our board meeting of the Huntsman Cancer Institute, which is probably the most important thing that we'll ever do. I mean, you talk politics and all this nonsense compared to what goes on there. The work, the heroism, the suffering, the folks who lay it all out there on the line after they're diagnosed with a disease that is far too common. And they lose all hope. And this is a place where hope is restored and where great men and women who are researchers and doctors are at the cutting edge of medicine and science. And it's just a very special place. So that's what we're mostly interested in and where I and my brother Peter and others and mm-hmm. my dad, bless his heart, will be involved for a long time.
Forgive me. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And beyond that, I'm involved with some businesses as a corporate director. Some great American companies, Ford Motor Company, which I love,
very nice.
In Detroit.
Cool.
And Caterpillar, which makes great big yellow tractors, and yeah. is one of the great manufacturing success stories in America. You hear a lot about what's going wrong with manufacturing, but you look at Ford Motor Company and Caterpillar, and you say, "Wow, we can do it better than anybody else in the world." And a company called Hilton Hotels, which is another great American company where I spend a lot of time.
Awesome.
I know you have to go, Governor Huntsman, but you had experience in China. Did you talk about cyber attacks? Did you talk about that kind of cyber espionage when you were ambassador over there? Because we have a problem now, not just with China, but with Russia. What is your commentary on that?
Well, listen, we have a huge problem, and you have to differentiate it between espionage, which is what countries do. They spy on each other, and we do it too pretty well. And the commercial espionage, which is the outright theft of intellectual property. So if you look at what the Russians do, the Chinese do, what the Iranians do, is their target sets are well beyond national security target sets. They go into civil society, private citizens, corporations, and they rip off whatever they want. And my big complaint is countries are going to watch each other on the espionage side, and it's really hard to draw red lines around what you can and cannot do. But we certainly ought to be able to draw red lines around private sector, civil society, and companies. We lose, because I co-chaired a national commission a couple of years ago on intellectual property theft, and we lose $300 billion per year in innovation, in ideas, in job creation. I'd say Chinese are 70% of the problem. The Russians they have better technology, but the Chinese are more persistent. They have more people doing it. So if I were President-elect Trump looking at China and all the trade issues that we've got, I would bore in on this one issue because it is huge, and there are some tools that we have readily available to stop it. They'd be controversial, and they would hurt in terms of our trade, but this has to be addressed because it's happening all the time, and it really is impacting some of our great companies in America.
Mm. Well, Governor, we can't thank you enough for coming in today and to spending some time with us. We really
great
appreciate
pleasure.
Your time.
What
this
a treat.
Is a whole lot of fun for
so
us.
So good to see you.
Yeah,
we'll do it
really
again
great.
Sometime.
Thank
Please
you,
do. Yeah, you